The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 23rd of March, 2021. On the podcast today, Tony Sirichik, Chief Executive Officer of Salt Lake Potash, explains the significance of the commencement of the process plant commissioning at its Lake Way project in Western Australia. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin, blockchain and cryptocurrency news. Plus, at the end of the podcast, I'll be highlighting two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, as always, at voxmarkets.co.uk. We see lots of other content there. There's an article on Powerhouse Energy. There's one on Cadence Minerals. There's one on Proactis. There's one on Amrit. Plenty of other stuff. There's videos there as well, of course. And always worth checking out the COVID-19 index. Biggest rise of the day is Inspiration Healthcare. And that's up 3.6% to 129. Biggest faller, React Group, is down 11.11% to 2p. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Sirichik, Chief Executive Officer of SO4. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me back, Justin.
Yeah, and you're churning out some cracking pictures, on your social media there of the project Lake Way. And you've announced yesterday Lake Way process plant commissioning commences, and we'll discuss the significance of that in a bit. Before we do, Tony, for people maybe who've not heard of you or vaguely familiar, just give us a summary as to what you're all about, please.
Yeah, sure. Look, we're Salt Lake Potash, or SO4 as we're known on our ticker, is a very soon-to-be sulfate of potash or potassium sulfate fertilizer producing company here in the Western Australian goldfields region. Our first project is Lake Way, which is just south of Wiluna Township, and it will be producing 245,000 tonnes of SOP fertilizer when it's at steady-state nameplate capacity. We also have within our Goldfields regional portfolio another 8 additional lakes of which we can look at future expansions and scalability.
Yeah, absolutely. So the processing plant commissioning commences. Explain what this means, if you could, Tony.
Sure. Look, we've spent the last couple of years, in the last, I think, 12 months there building the processing plant with GR Engineering Services, GRES, our partner in the design construct world for that piece of infrastructure. And look, we've come ahead in leaps and bounds. The schedule's been roaring along, and we're very much the finishing line for most of the areas now in the plant. I mean, the structural steel is well in to the 90%, electrical instrumentation is approaching 90% complete, tanks and vessels are 90% complete in this plant. And as it goes, as projects progress to this point, you commence commissioning, and that's what we did last Thursday. So the actual front end of the plant, the feed hopper, the first two conveyors that are joined in the middle there with the surge bin and a lump breaker sizer, but then ultimately feeds into the first tank, the attritioning agitation tank in the plant. We commissioned that sort of pieces of kit last Thursday very successfully, and that basically shoots the starter's gun in the air for the commissioning process. And now over the next few weeks we will continue to finalise commissioning as we walk towards what we call full load commissioning in a few weeks' time. And for those people thinking what's full load commissioning, that is when we actually start with a vengeance putting in the harvest salt feed continuously into the plant, and obviously at that same time producing premium SOP fertilizer out of the back end.
Yeah. So at the moment, it's not a continuous thing. You're testing it, and then you start ramping it to full, let's say, continuous processing. And then, of course, you produce the SO4, and you can sell that. So when does that start? Because you do say sales and revenue are now well within sight. When is that going to start happening then, Tony?
We got guiding June quarter. I mean, which is just around the corner, which approaching the end of March now, which walks us into the June quarter. So it's a few weeks away. You know, we are commissioning all of the different areas around the plant. There's 35 different what we call PUs or processing units, and one by one they knock over the commissioning of these PUs, and in a few weeks' time that all comes together. The whole thing goes live and green, and then we start, as I mentioned earlier, feeding into that feed hopper, you know, continuously and commence continuous production of that SOP at the back end. And then first sales, of course, you know, not allergic to making money, and I really want to see that cash flowing. And first sales will be, you know, very fast after, very soon after that full load commissioning commences there.
Yeah. And, you know, with a project that size, there's bound to be little small snags and all that stuff. But, I mean, are you quite happy this run quite smoothly? Are you quite impressed with how it's gone?
Oh, yeah, look, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, the quality of the plant really astounds me. I mean, I'm used to plants. I've run quite a few, built quite a few. And this one being up there, you know, I've been up there 3 days over the last 3 weeks and walking around this plant. I mean, the quality of the build is just outstanding. You know, all the name brands are all over it in terms of, you know, the crushers and the centrifuges and the Jameson cell flotations and all. It's got all the right names throughout the plant. And it's very robust in its build. So I'm very happy in that space.
Yeah, and just tell us, when you're up to speed there, what you're hoping to be generating cash-wise?
Well, look, if you go back to the study, I mean, I'm talking about the BFS, Bankable Feasibility Study, and I'll have to reference that as the most recent public, you know, material in terms of that question you've asked. Mm. At the sort of the 245,000 tonnes per annum nameplate steady state capacity, you know, we're sort of around that 111 million Aussie EBITDA, and I think just under that 80 million Aussie, you know, sort of profit each year. So it's a nice, you know, it's a cute little revenue generator. And obviously that gets influenced with the obvious things. What price do you realise on your SOP sales? What's the FX of the time? What's your operating costs when you're up and running and those sorts of things? So, you know, the study is there. That's what we're focusing on, realising those numbers as soon as we can, and then, of course, bettering them.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous stuff. Okay, Tony, as always, fella, if you could, then three reasons why someone should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
All right, I call them my three T's. The first one is thematics. This is a clean, green, very environmentally friendly process of making this SOP fertiliser. It's the solar sun is the main energy source. There we've got gas-fired power stations. You know, it's, as I jokingly say, it's taking salt water and sunshine to make fertilizer to feed people. And, you know, that's a growing population with a shifting wealth profile in the middle class. It has much more desires and wants in terms of foods, and that's what we're here to support. So that's my first T, the thematics. Mm-hmm. The second T is technicals. And when I say technicals, it's quite broad, you know, whether I'm talking about the hydrogeology or the chemistry and the brine, which is very strong, high grade, very low chlorides, which is very attractive to farmers. It's highly water soluble, which is, again, very attractive as a fertilizer to farmers. Also in the technical space, the support of the infrastructure that's existing around this lake, you know, right on one edge of the lake, we've got a gas goldfields gas pipeline. On the western edge of the lake is the Goldfields Highway. On the northern edge of the lake is the Wiluna Township airstrip. So smothered in infrastructure. So from that technical piece, it's very, very supportive. Mm. And that's what supported a very fast pathway to market and a very low capex for this build. And so that's the second T, technicals. And the third T is team. You know, the team that I've amassed here that's been with me now mostly for a couple of years, building this fast pathway, you know, history-making first SOP project in the country, in Australia and Western Australia. There's thousands of years I've amassed here of construction and maintenance and operating experience, and that team has really flourished as we've trailblazed our way through this project, and now we're bringing it in production. So the three T's there, the thematics, the technicals, and the team.
Excellent stuff. Tony, good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much, fella.
Thanks for the opportunity, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman. He is a writer of a book that's called The Crypto Trader, and there's lots of tales of his, you know, daring do in there. I don't know about your daring do. but how he makes money and stuff, and you can do that as well. Just so, Glenn, let me ask you, do you tell people what to do? Do you give them the tools in which to do it?
I give them the tools, Justin,
okay,
because
okay.
Actually it would be illegal for me to tell people exactly what to do, because obviously I'm not a financial advisor. Yeah. Like,
oh,
you.
All right. I thought you meant illegal to tell them what to do, because some of the stuff you do is basically illegal. You know what I'm saying? involving dungeons and stuff, I mean. Questionable get-ups, you know, PVC stuff. Yeah, do you know what? I've got to say, I may be quite short-tempered on this podcast. I've just been to the dentist, got a problem with my tooth. And what they did, they said, which one is hurting? And they got this ear gun and sprayed it into each other. I went, that one! It's hurting. I don't need to even spray a cold air right into my tooth that's decaying. That's already hurting anyway. Just really up the pain threshold, up the levels, you know, go.
So have you got a cavity, like one of those proper cavities? Like people used to have in the old days.
You're back to dungeons now, dungeons and PVC. No, I don't. Apparently, I got a filling in one of my tooth from years and years and years ago. But apparently, it's not good. It's infected somewhere there. So I got to have antibiotics. And I got to have it pulled out my wisdom tooth. So it's So yes. So anyway. So I know the old crypto having a sell off. Is it sustained?
The old crypto is having a sell off. It's been an unpleasant week. You know, I'm not going to lie to you, Justin. I've had my ups and downs.
Are you out
this
of Bitcoin? Have you weed your pants now? You're out. Or something?
No, I mean, you know, the thing is, it still hasn't gone down below the breakout that happened a few weeks ago, which was a lovely breakout. Everything was going so swimmingly. Yeah. The price of Bitcoin went all the way up to 62,000 or thereabouts. And I had lots of money. but I still have some of my profits, but I don't know. I mean, what am I moaning about? This is trading, isn't it? If the price goes up and then it has a correction, and then it goes up and then it has a correction. That's what happens in bull markets. So there's no point crying over it, because it's inevitable. It happens all the time. We're still in a bull market. We've just had a bit of an unpleasant correction. I wouldn't even call it a nasty correction. It's only been from like 62,000 down to about 53,000, which percentage-wise, for Bitcoin, is not that big a deal at all. If you look at Bitcoin on a daily chart, it still looks like it's bullish. Yeah, it's more hesitant than it has been, and there is the small possibility that this could be the start of a much worse correction, I think. You looking at the chart yourself at the moment?
Yes, I am.
Can you see what I mean? I just want to make the point. All the previous breakouts that we had over the many, many months were followed by huge upward thrusts before a correction.
Come on, keep it.
Whereas this time, we've had an upward thrust, like the most recent upward thrust.
When you're talking about upward thrust,
wasn't very strong.
I know you're sitting in your PVC.
And it was followed by, so you've got the upward thrust followed by a correction quite quickly, more quickly than we used to in the past. And that is a little warning sign. I think I actually might have mentioned that last week on the podcast, didn't I? Because there were already early signs of that we'd had a big correction quite quickly. And then we got back up, but not quite as high as the previous time, and now we've fallen down again to slightly lower lows, 53,000. As I say, on a daily chart, it still looks just about okay, but if you zoom into, say, an hourly chart or something like that, it actually looks quite nasty. So from a short-term perspective, it looks quite nasty, which is why I'm moaning about my profit balance, because it's not looking as healthy as it was before. But as I say, when you're dealing with open profits, that's always going to be the case, that sometimes they're a lot higher than they are. If you're a trend follower like me, you're going to be, almost by definition, in drawdown situation most of the time. You know, you can't be at all-time highs every single day, can you? You're going to have all-time highs maybe, say, one day out of seven, or even one day out of 30, depending on what you're trading. And then the rest of the time, your open profit is going to be lower than it was at its peak. So you're always going to feel a certain disappointment pretty much all the time. That's the nature of trading. And that's, you know, you have to try and accept that. And as you can tell, being a human being, I haven't fully accepted that reality yet. One day, maybe. Hello, are you still there?
Nearly. Right. Yeah, no, do you know what? I've said this before on the Bitcoin, and it's playing out, but if you just whack up an RSI and look at the peaks, right, every peak, the RSI has been it's not been peaking. It's like the first, the highest peak it had was the first, the strongest, and this means it's the strongest rally, was the 40,000 level, and that RSI was 87 then, came back down to like 40-odd, obviously a buy there, and then the second peak, after 80, and yet the price, this is called price divergence, of course, divergence in the RSI and the price. So that means that was a weaker rally, even though it went higher. And again, the third rally is just barely above 70. So it's grinding. These RSIs, these rallies are less ferocious, and they have less momentum behind them. So sooner or later, it's going to roll. And you've got to understand, when people, psychologically, when people are sitting on quite a big chunk of profit like you're discussing there, they don't want to give it up. So they'll probably start cashing in at some point. But they start getting a bit spooked, and they're sitting on, like, I don't know what the average profit people have, you know, prime investors, but when it's significant, when it's meaningful to them, they'll cash in. And maybe at 40,000, they didn't really cash in, but then now it's got at 66,000. This is like 50% above that. So that's going to be meaningful for a lot of people, couldn't it? So you don't want to...
Well, there's a contrary factor that I should mention, which is that the Americans are getting their checks shortly. A lot of Americans will be getting their checks this week, I'm told, from the central government. You know, their sort of, what do you call them, their stimulus checks or whatever. Yeah. The money that the Congress has passed in order to try and stimulate the economy. So they're just sending thousands of dollars, you know, to people's houses and put them in people's bank accounts. And according to surveys, quite a large chunk of that money is going to be invested by people in the stock market and also in Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So, later on this week, we could see a boost come off that. I'm not relying on it because, you know, these things are often well trumpeted and then just don't happen. You know, you're told everyone's going to invest in Bitcoin and then they just don't for whatever reason, and the price doesn't go up. So let's not rely on it, but, you know, it's something to bear in mind. It could give the market a boost later this week. And we could be looking at that same chart this time next week and going, yeah, what was all the fuss about? Look, it's gone to huge new highs. I suppose what I'm saying is, from a charting perspective, the chart doesn't look broken yet. I take your point, and I feel the same way, that the most recent rally has been very weak, but it hasn't completely undone itself yet. I think there's still hope, Justin.
Hope, high potential. I didn't realize in America they don't have furlough. And so recently I mistakenly said, go big or go home. Every American is getting $1,400. Because that's in place of furlough, isn't it? I didn't realize that.
They've got a different way of doing things than us. In a way, it's a much less targeted form of compensation, obviously. You know, the great thing about the furlough scheme is that the money actually goes to the people who actually need it, whereas just sending checks to everyone is a bit of a scattergun approach. So it's not necessarily a fairer way of doing it, but in terms of stimulating the economy, it's bound to be pretty effective, because you're getting the checks into the hands of ordinary people who are going to spend that money, as opposed to, I suppose it could be argued, furlough is, you know, a lot of, well, some furlough money is going to be spent and invested and all the rest of it, but some of it is just needed to kind of fill the gap and, you know, fill the gap that was there, and will be spent on saving, not spent on saving, will be saved. And
Clem, you can't tell us what it's going to be doing. You can't tell us what the Americans going to be doing with their money. You're just silly, will you, silly little boy?
I'm spitballing here. Would there be a difference in spending between furlough money and stimulus money?
Don't worry about that. Let's go back to Bitcoin. Where's your stop loss?
I suppose what I'm saying, hold on. I just want to make the point. I suppose what I'm saying is, if you don't target the money by you know, using the furlough scheme, if instead you just send out stimulus checks, then at least some of that money is going to get into the hands of people that don't need it, and those people who don't need it will then either invest it or spend it on frivolous things. And that's basically what Joe Biden wants. He wants to stimulate the economy. So maybe it's a better way of doing things from an economic point of view. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, so where will you be out at Bitcoin?
Well, the breakout, the most recent breakout from a short. I mean, you've got to remember, I've got long-term positions in cryptos and I've got shorter-term positions. And if we're talking shorter-term, I tweeted, what was it, a few weeks ago now, that I was looking at that potential breakout from a short-term pattern, and then it broke out and I bought it, and I'm still in it because the price hasn't actually returned to that breakout point yet. So, you know, much as we're moaning, it still hasn't returned back to 52,000, which is the breakout point that I'm talking about from that short-term pattern. My long-term crypto positions are still as solid as ever. Longer term ones, because the long term trend is still resolutely upward. But as you and I have pointed out several times already on this podcast, that may not be the case by this time next week. It is possible, isn't it? Look at that. In fact, the more I stare at this chart while I'm talking to you, the more worried I get. I don't like it, Justin. I don't like it one bit.
Well, how much you got in there? How much you got in there?
You know, significant amounts of money.
Significant to you, yeah?
Sums that would blow your mind, Justin.
Significant to you.
You'd just be like, what the hell? Who even has that much money?
Tell me.
I'm joking. I'm not. You know I don't ever tell you how much money I have. I don't want to reveal the contents of my bank account.
It's going to be a measured amount, isn't it? It can't be. You're not risking everything there, are you?
Oh, right. Oh, I see. You mean as a proportion. Right. No, I mean, I've only ever risked, well, as my book explains in the risk management sections, you should never risk more than a small chunk of your portfolio on any one investment.
What do you suggest? What percentage do you suggest in that?
Well, I mean, the rule of thumb for traders generally...
Give me clean, Glenn. Give me clean.
...is never risk more than approximately 0.5 to 1% of your portfolio on any one trade. Yeah, that's it. Look, if you do the statistics, if you work it out mathematically,
are you doing trading? You're doing trading. This is not investing. Still trading with leverage. Is it? Is that what you're saying? On points?
Sorry. This is risk levels. This isn't the actual amount of money you have invested. I'm talking about the risk, as in you stand to lose in a bad scenario no more than 1% of your portfolio on any one trade. But you might have, depending on what the asset is, you might have as much as, say, 10% of your portfolio actually invested in that thing. If it's not a volatile asset, I'm not talking about cryptocurrencies here, obviously, because they're all volatile. But, you know, say you're investing in something really slow and boring, you might have, say, 10% of your portfolio in it, and you've worked out that when, you know, historically, when something bad, really bad happens, you might lose, say, 10% of that allocation. And 10% of the 10% of your portfolio would be 1%. So therefore, you'd be risking 1% of your portfolio in anything other than an apocalypse situation.
Where's your risk category in the book? There's no chapter on risk, is there?
It's later on in the book. Because it's obviously more dull and boring, so I left it till later on. But it is actually probably the most important part.
Yeah, that's why. When I did 10 videos, 10 lessons I've learned, risk was my first. I did say that. I said it's not the most exciting, but it's the most important. Because if you were taken out of the game, you can't play the game any longer. That's it. So get the risk bit right first, then secondly, I go into reward. See? But I can't see. Hang on. Is this the risk parity allocation? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Is that what it is in your book? Is that your? It's not a chapter, is it?
Yeah, there's a chapter. Hold on, I'm just accessing my.
There is no risk
online.
In your book at all. All I've got is risk parity allocation.
Talking about
half a
what
page.
Are you talking about,
it's
man?
Like one page.
It's the chapter 11. How much to buy, and subheading: it's all about risk. Is that risk enough for you?
No, you put risk.
It's all about risk is literally the subheading.
There's no subheading. So, chapter 11 in the index is how much to buy.
Yeah, if you go to the chapter itself, there's a subheading
right at the beginning. Yeah.
Well, first of all, there's a quote. It says, there are old traders and there are bold traders, but there are no old bold traders.
Who's that by?
It's by the unknown trader.
Who is he?
Well, exactly. Nobody knows. It's an old Wall Street saying. There are old traders and there are bold traders, but there are no old bold traders. And that is very true. Because the fact is that whenever you hear about somebody who's suddenly made a fortune in a very short space of time, what you don't then hear is them doing that year after year or decade after decade. You never hear of that person again. Or if you do hear of them again, what you hear is that they've done the rest of their career in a much more sedate fashion, because they've worked out after having an initial big piece of luck early on that they were taking far too much risk and were just very lucky in making a lot of money very quickly, like a lot of us have been in the world of cryptocurrencies. We've been lucky. That's a stroke of luck. Doesn't come along very often.
But you know that old saying is, the harder you work, the luckier you get, isn't it, really? The more research you do, basically. And I find that, but you can't keep, you know, doing these massive percentage gains, because it's impossible. The bigger your portfolio is, the harder it becomes. Yeah,
you'd be taking too much risk. It's kind
of like
you
physically
the
can't.
You
can't really, because if, for example, if I'm a microcap, I love microcaps. You know, that's why I think it's hard. Like, a lot of crap in the microcap space. A lot of crap. But if you do enough research, you'll find the odd diamond. It's like, and I've said this on videos, it's like diamond mining, you know? Those guys have to excavate a lot of dirt and rubbish to get a diamond. And that's what it's like looking for a diamond in the rough with microcaps. And you can't, you know, I can't even get liquidity at all. I mean, I'm buying this other stock at the moment, and I can't buy it. I can hardly get a quote for the size I want. I have to do it, you know, bit by bit for ages. But I've got to be confident that company is going to be a lot more liquid, a lot more popular in a couple of years' time or years' time when I want to get out. Otherwise, I'll, you know, maybe it's like a fat man trying to get his hand out of a cookie jar. You can't get it out, you know, to just drop the cookies and run. But yeah, so, you know, that's the point being is that you can't, percentage-wise, make those gains because you can't get access. You know, going from 1,000 to £2,000 is quite easy. But going from, say, what, 1 million to 2 million is a lot harder, because are you going to double your money? You can double 1,000 to £2,000 in a small cap stock easily. Not easily, but you can do it. It's not that hard. But try and find that equal amount of return on £1 million. That's hard, you know, because you've got to go up the microcaps space. And they don't, the bigger the companies are, the slower they move, you know.
It is harder. I mean, it can be done. There are a few guys online who I hugely respect, day traders even. Only a few, though. As far as I can tell, there are only a few in the entire world of people who trade in and out really, really quickly out of microcaps and small stocks like that, using quite large amounts of money. You know, these guys are multi-millionaires, but they've just perfected a certain strategy. You know, when people just get a certain setup that they do over and over again religiously for their entire life. You know, if you get a tiny niche like that and just find yourself the place in that niche and just do it and do it and do it, you know, you can be successful. But there are only a handful of people successfully doing that, and they have loads of followers who don't manage to kind of repeat their success most of the time, which is very telling, I think.
What are you saying, traders or investors? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about day traders here mainly, just doing one kind of trade every single day over and over and over again. It is boring, but they make a lot of money if they stick to their knitting.
A reason why I invest is I quite like you know, small business stories and, you know, trying to find them and being detective work and all that stuff. That's what I kind of like, you know?
Yeah, I think that's interesting as well. I like that detective-y.
Rather than just trading for a profit. I'm not stimulated by that. I have to sort of, you know, look at the company and enjoy what they're doing. A lot of companies I look at, hopefully, have a bit of IP, a USP in some way. I'm just looking how they've done things. I find that quite interesting, you know?
Yeah. One thing I must mention before I forget. Is Bitcoin Gold. Do you remember Bitcoin Gold?
Yeah, there's a guy really pushing it, isn't it, online. Who is it? There's a guy who was banging on about it all the time. What's his name?
I don't know. Who's banging on about it?
He was going everywhere. Is it Bitcoin? I'm sure it's Bitcoin Gold. Or was there a guy going, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, go on.
Bitcoin Gold is... a kind of spin-off of Bitcoin, right?
Years ago. Why.
And, you know, people got all excited years ago, thinking, oh, you know, Bitcoin Gold is going to take over from Bitcoin itself. It was forked off from Bitcoin in 2017, with the idea being that it would be a kind of new improved Bitcoin. But it suffered a series of hack, or not hacks, but what we call 51% attacks, where basically a critical mass of the mining community, of the Bitcoin gold mining community, started sort of attacking the integrity of Bitcoin gold itself. Basically, I mean, that could theoretically happen to Bitcoin. All you need is 51% of all the people who control the network to decide they're all going to do something bad together, like steal everything, steal all the money.
Yeah, if something happens,
and
it's
theoretically
too big,
it's possible.
Too big,
yeah, it's not going to happen with Bitcoin, or it's extremely unlikely to happen with Bitcoin. But because Bitcoin gold was so small, stuff like that started happening. Anyway, the reason I bring up Bitcoin gold is because it gives you an idea of where we are in the hype cycle now, that Bitcoin gold is suddenly roaring up. People are buying Bitcoin gold as if it actually has any kind of credibility whatsoever. So, you know, we're at that stage in the cycle where people are basically buying any old crap and expecting it to go to the moon.
Yeah.
That's what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. So if you're a pure trader, you know, by all means, you might want to buy some Bitcoin gold, but you'd have to completely ignore the fundamentals in order to do that. And that's not something I would recommend.
Yeah. What are the fundamentals of any crypto? Well,
the fundamentals of Bitcoin are basically a lot of people are using it. The network is huge, but they're not using it to actually buy things in shops. But nonetheless, it has a lot of support from millions and millions of people. That is the kind of fundamentals. But it's obviously a circular argument, because you're saying fundamentally it's strong because lots of people are using it, and lots of people are using it because fundamentally it's strong. So it's a circular argument, and ultimately it's meaningless. There's some existential conundrum for you there.
Are you there? Right. Anything else worth chatting about in the world of crypto, Bitcoin, Ethereum? Is there anything? So are you saying that is rallying and everything else is falling? Is that what you're saying? In the world of crypto,
what's running and everything? Oh, you mean Bitcoin gold?
Yeah,
Bitcoin gold is one of many tiny, tiny cryptos that are still kind of bucking
Ripple's
the trend.
Going.
And, you know, there are some breakouts here and there. Yeah, Ripple, believe it or not, another pretty dodgy cryptocurrency has been rallying recently as well. But what can I tell you news-wise before
Nothing
I
really.
Go that's important? This, hold on, there must be something. I'm thinking.
No, don't do that. When people start doing that, that's it. That's it. That's it.
Is it?
You're out of here. Red card, Glenn.
I've actually.
Whatever you're thinking, just go silent.
There's just nothing.
Whatever you're thinking, just go silent, right? Whenever you're on the phone to someone, they go, hang on. Think, right, just hang up. It doesn't matter if you've been waiting on the phone for an hour. Just hang up straight away. So I don't want that noise in my ear. Thank you very much.
You want to talk more about NFTs?
No.
Talked about them a lot.
No. No.
You want to?
I've got a bad tooth. Have to open my mouth, it hurts.
Oh, poor you. Did you get it filled in the end, though?
No, they're going to rip it out. They're going to rip my jaw out. Right. And she's going to have a knee on my chest and yanking it out, my wisdom tooth there.
You need to stop eating so many jelly babies.
All right. Marvel stuff on that, Glenn. What did you tell me where your line was, where you get out?
Oh, it's the breakout line that I tweeted a couple of weeks ago. So if you look back through my tweets, you'll see it. But it was around about 52,000. That's where the price broke out, went all the way up to 62,000.
You're going
to
lose a lot of money by then,
all the
you?
Way back down. Actually, this is a good point I want to make before I go about breakouts, right?
Oh, you're determined to right to the end, aren't you? Come on.
Yeah, because I've still got 3 minutes, according to my clock. When you get a breakout from a small pattern, right? That one that we had a few weeks ago, the breakout at 52,000, that was from a little, what we call a head and shoulders pattern. But the pattern had only lasted a couple of weeks, right? And it is just little. The rule of thumb with breakouts from patterns is that if it's a short-term pattern, it's only really valid on a short-term basis. If it's a longer-term pattern, it can have longer-term implications. So the problem here is that that little breakout at 52,000 was only ever a short-term pattern. And the fact that the price went up to 62,000 is kind of what the rule of thumb would imply, that the price breaks out and then rises about as high as the pattern itself was high. If you look at the head and shoulders pattern, you'll see that it was around about $10,000 in height. In other words, the pattern begins or hit its low at around about $42,000-$43,000, and then it hit its high at around about $52,000, and then broke out and likewise then rose about $10,000 before falling back. Because the problem is, once a pattern has kind of resolved itself by breaking out and then rising by a significant amount, it's kind of as if the pattern no longer matters anymore to some degree. The price is free to kind of fall back. Hopefully, the support line that was created when the pattern broke out will still have some validity and will hold the price permanently, or at least somebody permanently above that level. But that's by no means guaranteed. This is the thing people don't realize about patterns. If you trade a short-term pattern like that, you've got to only expect short-term success. Anything more than short-term success on that pattern is a bonus. Do you see what I'm getting at? It's hard to explain.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
when you can't see the chart that I'm looking at right now, then it's quite hard to describe.
All I heard there is sounds and noises and the word pattern meant many a time. That's all I hear.
All right. In short, if you trade
the end. In short,
breakout,
thank you, Glenn.
If you trade a short-term breakout, you can only expect short-term results, and then you may get like a massive correction or whatever. So you know, short-term. That's why short-term traders tend to take their profit after a short-term gain, because the pattern that broke out only has short-term profit implications. Whereas,
can you make that short-term? The description. Give me the shorter-term description.
Like the one that we bought. In what was it, when the massive Bitcoin breakout happened in August last year or thereabouts, right? Stop it. In August last year, that massive breakout, that had long-term implications, and those long-term implications are still continuing to this day. We're still in a long-term uptrend. So you've got to distinguish between the
length term. Fire.
I'm giving you gold here, Justin. Gold. You know, you can't buy this kind of advice.
Good job. Right.
Unless you buy my book. Otherwise, you can't buy this kind of advice.
Well, in fact, reading your book would be a shorter description than that. Anyway, but marvellous, Glenn. Thanks for that. Don't forget, Glenn's book still selling hot, like hotcakes.
Yeah.
But you didn't sound convincing then, Glenn. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Until next week.
All right.
Back to your dungeon.
I will. I'll crawl and creep back into my dungeon now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Quetzal Capital. Sorry, don't pronounce that. QTZ is on the next exchange. At four, Oreo Resources. Up. By the way, Quetzal's up 10%, 10.2. Oreo Resources, that's OR, ticker 8.3% up to 0.975 pence. At four, Dev Clever Holdings. It's up 2.67% to 36.5. At two, Futura Medical, down 10.5% to 6.5. And at one, Wevis Holdings, 21.13% up to 4.3 pence. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Canadian Overseas Petroleum Holdings and Company. At four, Oriel Resources, Sinala Joint Venture Update. At three, UK Oil and Gas, Basseur 3 Drilling Site Construction Commences. At two, Dev Clever Holdings, Business Advisory and Intelligence Group. And at one, it's Powerhouse Energy, Progress Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.